Dumelang, sambonani, good morning. Welcome to it, Beyond the Ballot with Bafana Modise. 2024 elections saw new parties going into parliament, and one of them is Rise Mzansi. This is one party that was very, very, very popular before the election. We saw their posters across the city. Everywhere you went, you saw Rise Mzansi. They came with a famous slogan called 2024 is our 1994. In studio today, I'm speaking to Teboho Moalusi. He's a professional, also a creative preneur, a founder of a Young Professionals Association, UCT, former UCT SRC treasurer. He's a Gauteng provincial convener of Rise Mzansi. Teboho, welcome on studio. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Abuti?
No, I'm good. I'm good, my brother. As I said, before the election, Rise Mzansi had this vibe with it. You know, he was seen as the party for the youth. And with the results now, what are your thoughts? Are you guys happy with the current results?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. We are happy with the results. You know, 18 months ago, Rise Mzansi was not a thing. We contested the very first elections in 2024, and we've managed to get 2 seats in the National Assembly, as well as one in Gauteng, which is a positive outcome. I think we have everything to be proud of. This was a very complex election campaign, and we can see that there was blood on the floor. Many political parties did not perform, even those that had decades of experience. So as Rise Mzansi, we're honored and proud that we've got a mandate from the people to send us both into the Gauteng legislature and into parliament to do the work of governing and delivering a safe, prosperous, equal and united South Africa in one generation.
Lovely, because some people would say they had expected that since we came in as a new party, a new South Africa, the Rainbow Nation type of a party, you would have gotten more youth votes, even more seats in parliament. Do you think maybe your messaging didn't really go across a length and breadth of South Africa as you probably had expected?
No, I think people have to look and understand the voting patterns in South Africa. If you look at the number of young people who are registered and eligible to vote, it's actually relatively low, even though we've got the demographic dividend of having lots of young people. And so whilst we may have seemed to be a youthful party, we see ourselves as an intergenerational party. We appeal across the board for all South Africans, and I think that's what the voter outcome really showed us. Would we have wanted more, a better outcome? Absolutely. I think every political party would have wanted to do better because, you know, I think everybody has aspirations to lead and have a dominant voice in the room. But the South African voters have said, we want you guys to work together. And hence why we find ourselves in a coalition. We always knew that coalitions are the future of South African politics. But it's not a South African, you know, phenomenon. It happens across the globe. And I think it's an important, you know, development in our democracy.
Lovely. You look at what came out of this election. Came a new word, GNU, Government of National Unity. Some are calling it a coalition. Did you guys get the call from the president as well to say, come join the party, or they never gave you a call?
Well, we were given the call, and it was the ANC as the leader of government. Despite the fact that they got just about 40%, they still have a significant mandate, you know, from 12 million South Africans or 12 million votes. And so, you know, as the leading party, it was incumbent upon them to define the terrain insofar as how politics plays itself out. And so we engaged the ANC, but we also engaged other political parties because, like I said, we realized that coalition are the future of South African politics, and working together is going to be fundamental for the success and the outcomes of our citizens. So we got the call, and you know, we continue to engage in the GNU with the partners that are part of that arrangement.
But I didn't see Songezo in the cabinet or any of the Rise Mzansi guys. What was the arrangement out of the call? Was it more like, okay, come in? You're like, no, not now, we'll come later. What was the arrangement? What was the call all about?
Well, let's go back to the principles of the GNU, right? As Rise Mzansi, our position was based on three fundamental principles. Number one, constitutionality is important. So we will only get involved insofar as the constitution can be preserved and protected. Is there space for amending the constitution? Absolutely. But what we are not keen to do is just throw it out wholesome and not believe that we're a constitutional democracy.
True.
So that's number one. Number two is the rule of law. Part of the challenges that we have in this country is that people don't follow the law. So anybody or any political party that has a posture of wanting to use the law negatively in order to advance their own personal selfish ambitions is people that we're not willing to work with. And then the third one was stability. The people of South Africa want stability. They want stability so that they can predict and plan their lives. And in a stable environment, an economy can grow. You can get foreign direct investment.
Yes.
You can start managing the country. But when things are in flux and continuously changing, people are anxious, which makes it difficult to actually run a country. And so those are the fundamentals. Insofar as the cabinet positions.
Did you join the GNU?
That was the question. Yes, we are.
Okay.
We are part of the GNU, so we are part of the, I think it's 11 parties in total. And if you look at the three principles that I've spoken to, all of those 10 political parties subscribe to those principles. And so that's what bound us together. We also were given a mandate by our voters to participate in government.
Yes.
We're not here to sit in the corner and watch things unfold. We need to be in the room where decisions are being made. We need to be in the room where we can influence the outcomes. And so being part of the GNU allows us to hold the other political parties accountable, which is what we had said we want to do as new leaders in government.
Tebogo, what you also have, especially in Gauteng, there's been a fallout between the DA and the ANC, and which for some reason yesterday, Vuyiswa Ramakgopa was announced as an MEC. The question then becomes, without the DA, as a party, do you think with MK, since you just spoke about constitutionalism, and MK have said that the whole constitution needs to be, so you going to government with MK in Gauteng, doesn't that maybe defeat the party's messaging?
Well, I don't know if we're going to government with the MK. Our understanding is that Panyaza, as the executive of the Gauteng legislature, had the mandate to appoint an executive. We are honored to have an MEC for agriculture and rural development. And the idea is that we as new leaders are going to advance the interests of the people insofar as that portfolio is concerned. The politics of the GNU in the province are being driven through the office of the ANC.
Yes.
And so they must let you know what the strategy is insofar as how the configuration is currently. We got given the mandate and the opportunity to lead, and that is what we want to advance. The relationship between the ANC and the DA is the relationship between the ANC and the DA, and they must figure that out.
I think the fear is if this relationship collapses at the national level, it might bring the country again into instability, and maybe we might see the rand reacting, the markets reacting. So as a leader, let's put Razumzansi aside. As a leader, do you think that this relationship will last, the GNU at the national level, do you think is durable?
Look, I think we hope so. You know, the GNU parties understand that there are different dynamics at national and as well as in the provinces. What's happening in the Western Cape and KZN and Gauteng are significantly different. And I think what we should do is insulate and ring fence some of the relationships that happen within the provinces and make sure that those who are in the GNU work as hard as possible to put the people at the center of any of these outcomes. Is it going to be easy? Absolutely not. We, you know, in principle and ideologically represent different politics. But if we can put the people at the center of our politics, then I think we should yield better outcomes. It's still a competitive space, right? Let us not think that we're going into the GNU as friends. We're not friends.
Yeah.
We are still opposition. And when we see things going wrong, we will raise our voice. And to the extent that we may find that the principles of the GNU no longer advance the interests of the people, we will step back. We don't mind stepping back from positions of power in the interest of making sure that we stand true to our principles and why we are in this thing to begin with.
I look at the new cabinet. You have the PA, as the Gideon Mackenzie, as the Minister of Sports and Recreation. You have our former Minister of Education, Angie Motshekga, commanding the force. The question then becomes, does the party feel with the cabinet, what is your overview feedback? Do you think Cyril went in the right direction by certain appointments, by recycling certain individuals that were deemed not quite competent before in the previous administration.
Our mandate and our narrative in the campaign was we need new leaders.
Yes.
And insofar as some of the positions are concerned, I think there are concerns. There are, the likes of Minister Angie demonstrated that she was not able to turn around our education department.
Sure.
And we find it concerning that she's been moved to another strategic department that speaks about national and international, safety. And so it is a concern that she has been moved into that department. Mm-hmm. Another concern is the size of the cabinet. We have a massive government with lots of deputy ministers. Mm-hmm. And whilst we understand the importance of balancing the interests of the GNU, we do believe that there could have been a better approach at decreasing the size of government, particularly on the deputy minister side, and making sure that you've got a fit-for-purpose government and you find other spaces and ways for members of the GNU to be able to participate. Just like ourselves, we were not offered an executive role. We did not demand one because we believe there are various roles that an opposition can play in a government of national unity. And so we will sit in the legislature. We will make sure we hold the executive to account to the highest level, because that's what South African voters expect. It's important that from a competence point of view, the very best must lead. And whether or not we have the best, I think will be as a function of how people perform. And we will keep a close eye on that performance and make sure that we call it out when it's not up to standard.
You know, what surprises most South Africans is the fact that DA, and like yourselves, you were against this cabinet, the size of the cabinet. And now it seems that the DA is okay with the cabinet when it fits their people in. I mean, from 60 to over 70 members of parliament, the cabinet, it's very worrying. So it becomes an issue of, was Cyril only trying to make everyone happy by this cabinet, or was he just trying to manage ANC majority somehow within the GNU? Your thoughts?
You'd have to ask Cyril that. Unfortunately, I'm not his spokesperson, but I've shared our view. We think the size of the cabinet is oversized.
It's oversized. Yeah, that's it.
You'd have to speak to Victor, who I believe is the president's spokesperson, and get a sense of what he thinks about your question.
No, I think maybe my question came from a point that you are part of the GNU, and I'm sure there might have been some consultation before the cabinet was announced. I'm sure maybe Sengizek might have said, but the president, this is huge. You can't, how are you going to finance this large cabinet? I mean, this is like probably the biggest ever since 1994. We used to say something about Zuma's cabinet. Cyril came back in the last previous administration. He tried to size it down, but now he has went back even beyond 75. So I think I'm asking as a stakeholder in the GNU to say your overview direction. Do you think it was more about get everybody in to shut them up?
I'll tell you that we did raise the issue of the size of the cabinet, but it's still the president's prerogative in terms of how he structures it. If you look at countries all over the world, I think Germany has the least number of executives in their cabinet, but they then, run their state particularly different to ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I think we must also look at what is fit for purpose for the people of South Africa. We may find that actually this configuration of government yields better outcomes for the people. The only way to do so is we make sure that we grow the economy, we create jobs, we build a safer South Africa where people can truly express themselves. What will be a telling sign will be, in 5 years' time, will we look back and say this was a gross mistake? Or will we say that a bigger cabinet actually yielded better results because you were able to stabilize the political players and create a space for everybody to participate? So we're in uncharted territory, and hindsight is a perfect science. But we will constantly be keeping an eye on things. And if we think that there's problems, we must create space for course correction. The president, whilst they have the prerogative to build a cabinet, they also have a prerogative to change a cabinet. So at a later stage, he may say, look, this thing doesn't work. I would like to reconfigure, and the reconfiguration may look a particular way to yield a particular outcome.
I think most of us now, what we are worried about, it's South Africa in the next 5 years. And you're looking at the economy, you're looking at unemployment, you're looking at all these ills that most people are worried about in this country. In this GNU, is there maybe a top five issues that you have agreed upon in the next 5 years to tackle, maybe in the next 100 days?
Yeah, so certainly. I mean, for Rise Mzansi, the top five was number one, food.
Okay.
Food security, food provision is absolutely important. And that's why I think having Vuyiswa Ramakgopa as the MEC of Agriculture and Rural Development is particularly strategic. People are dying of hunger. I think we just don't realize how many households go without a meal every single day. And it's led to issues of stunting, of nutrition challenges, of health challenges. And so we must deal with that. The indignity of poverty and hunger is something that we should not experience in a country that has got so much to offer. We export almost 29% of our produce to overseas.
Yes.
And we need to look at how do we stop wastage? How do we better use the country to feed our people? So food is key. Number two is safety. South African people have told us in no uncertain terms that they feel unsafe. And so we have to do everything we can to make sure that we improve our ability to deal with crime and safety. And not just, you know, arresting and putting people in jail. It's both the pull and push factors of criminality and safety.
Yeah.
So we must solve for the socioeconomic conditions that enable crime to happen. People are not born criminals. It's either, you know, circumstances make them desperate so that they become criminals. Yes, there are those who are opportunistic, basileng, and they just do bad things.
Yeah.
But by and large, when you solve for employment, when you solve for quality life, people are engaged in work and then don't turn to crime. So we must solve the socioeconomic issues, but we must also then deal with when things go wrong. How do we embolden our police, our justice system?
Yeah, I think speaking on crime, Joburg or Josie is known as the, you know, the crime capital, if one had to say. You look at how many people die on the streets, you look at the levels of crime, how you have to hire as a whole security company to protect your homes. Where do you have policing? Do you think maybe increasing their force in this new administration will do better? How do we deter crime?
I think it's an and approach, not an or. So it's not put more boots on the ground or, you know, create more jobs. I think they're intersectional, these issues. So we must do both. We must do all of it. We must, for example, improve the lighting in our areas of living in our townships. People, when you live in an area that is dark, we know that that's directly related to increased crime.
Yeah.
We even saw with load shedding that crime stats in certain areas increased because of load shedding, because there's no connectivity, there's no lighting, and so criminals have got the space to operate, you know, with without being caught by the cops. So I think it is a combination of all of the things. Having more boots on the ground is key. But those people need to be trained. They need to understand the role of policing. We shouldn't have a fearful relationship with police. You know, at some point in the past, you know, under Minister Bekicele, there was these people called amaperete. And they used to walk into places and just slap people up for no reason. We should have a relationship and a partnership with policing and not be fearful of them because they serve us. And so those are some of the cultural issues that we must deal with. Notwithstanding the issues around our justice system, you know, we need better magistrates, we need better processes, we need to digitize a lot of our criminal case dockets so that we're not having dockets that get lost. And obviously there's the corruption issue. So it's a complex thing. But I think the point is, if we do not deal with the socioeconomic conditions of how people live, poverty breeds crime. And so let's solve for poverty, let's solve for jobs and the economy. And by doing so, people will then have a lot more to lose and have a vested interest in the success of the country.
There is a man called Gideon Mackenzie who campaigned on illegal immigration. And looking at the new Minister of Home Affairs, which is DA, and South Africans were kind of worried, are we going to get to a point where we address the issue of illegal immigration, especially here in Gauteng, since we're in government in Gauteng? Is there, are there any prospects of deportation, of maybe if there's no deportation, of getting permits for people who are in this country illegally?
Look, I think you'd have to ask the MEC responsible for the movement of people. I want to be honest with you, Akere, yeah. so that we also don't overstep our mandate.
Yes.
Wabon.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you our thoughts around immigration.
Okay.
And whether or not the new leadership takes that on board, that's up to them.
Okay.
I think before I do that, the realization of what coalition governments mean is that your manifesto doesn't become the dominant idea that must lead how we then run the government.
Okay.
So every MEC must take their manifesto, but must also look at the other manifestos and bring those together to then build a plan of how they're going to deal with issues.
I hear you.
Otherwise, we're going to have problems because nobody won an outward majority, and therefore nobody's idea should be seen as more superior than another.
Okay.
So that's an ideological and in-principled approach. In terms of immigration, there are a number of key things that we must do to solve immigration instead of just politicizing it. It's a very complex issue that affects this country for generations. You know, people have been moving in and out of South Africa for decades, if not more than 30 years.
Yes.
So it's not something that, you know, started 5 years ago. So there's a few things. Number one, sort out the borders. Our borders are too porous and we need to solve for that. The infrastructure around our borders must be solved so that you can manage the movement of people and goods across the border.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. Number two is you must deal with corrupt officials because you can build the walls that you want and the fences you want. But if you've got corrupt officials at the points of entry, they then facilitate people to come in illegally. So deal with that and get rid of corrupt officials. Number three is we must grow the economy. The reason why people in South Africa are concerned about foreign nationals is that the economy is not absorbing enough people. If you grow the size of the pie and you increase the participation of South Africans in the economy, then there's enough to go around, even for international and foreign nationals.
But don't you think maybe the fear is the fact that you have more illegal immigrants in the country, over 2 million, or probably now you're going beyond 3 million. And you have jobs that most South Africans can't get access to, like your restaurants and domestic work, or either handy jobs.
Yeah.
So I tend to feel like it's also the issue of safety as well, where you get to a point where people are here undocumented, they can commit crime and they can't be traced. So I don't think it's only basically on the economy aspect, but it's also the part where of safety, it's a part of sovereignty as well.
Yeah, so I was going to go through the other points.
Okay.
You stopped me at number three.
Okay.
So I spoke about the borders. I talked about corrupt officials. I've spoken about build the economy.
Yes.
The fourth one is you must make sure that you document people. We can't have people living in South Africa that we don't know why they are here, how long they are here, where they live, for the very reason that you raise. You need to be able to track and trace people so that in the event of a case of crime, you're able to then track people to where you can find them. So that documentation of people is crucial. And by the way, that's not just a foreign national issue. We've got South Africans who live and were born here that don't have IDs.
Certainly,
they don't have birth certificates. They get to matric and that's the first time they realize that they are supposed to have a document called an ID. And that's a travesty of home affairs. And we must solve for that, because it's an issue across the board. So let's document people and know who's here and know who should not be here. The fifth thing, the last one, around foreign national is being illegal in the country should not be okay. Akira, I spoke about the rule of law. And if you are here illegally, it means that you must leave. You must get out and you must then, from your place of origin, make the application to be here legally. But because we will have stronger borders, stronger border officials, it will mean that once you're taken out of the country because you're here illegally, you don't just walk through the gates the next day. Because that's part of the problem. We deport people that are illegal immigrants, and literally in a week's time, they walk back in through the corrupt officials, through our porous borders, and they find themselves here. And that process costs taxpayers money. So it's a systemic issue that we must solve. It's a leadership issue that we must solve and make sure that we don't just deal with it as, mabahambe.
Yes,
you know, all successful nations, developing nations in the world, have got some level of relationship with the global citizen. Those people bring resources, they bring skills, they bring networks. We need to ring fence opportunities that must be allocated to South Africans.
Yeah.
To your point earlier on,
yes.
There must be opportunities where we say, here, it's a South African's first opportunity. Mm. It's our country, and we must be able to call that as a policy. Mm-hmm. But we must also invite people from other countries to bring their skills and ideas so we can grow the economy and we can learn. Mm-hmm. If you look at Singapore, if you look at some of our global Asian tigers.
Yes.
That's what they have done. They've categorized certain aspects of the economy, mm-hmm. but they've also enabled people to come in and live and work. And once people live and work and service the country, you're able to earn tax money from them. You're able to get foreign direct investment. And that's what South Africans can benefit from.
One thing that we are looking at with this new parliament, mm. we are seeing that there's going to be a GNU arrangement and mm. you're going to have the progressive forces, as they call themselves, your EFF, your MK party, ATM. I'm not sure because some have been jumping ship, mm. right? The question then becomes, you in parliament right now, what do you think should be improved going to this seventh legislature?
I think the quality of our democracy needs to be improved. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to how do we make sure that people are invested and can have a say in how the politics of the day happen. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
We've got this situation currently with the city of Johannesburg and the fact that they've implemented this 200 rand service fee per month. Mm. Now, if you've got a prepaid meter, every single month you must pay that service fee unless you are qualified as what they call an indigent or below a certain salary threshold.
Yeah.
What that is currently doing is that for the middle class who are being retrenched from work, who can't find work, they are feeling the pinch. The cost of living continues to increase. And the consultation was not sufficient.
Yes.
We can't say the consultation was sufficient when people are coming out now and saying, I am not happy with this outcome. And so the quality of our democracy needs to improve so that we don't have situations like this. Mm. Otherwise, you'll have what happened in Kenya. Right. Yeah, when people then raise their voices through social upheaval because they feel unheard and they feel they feel like they haven't been engaged. Mm. So we must build a better democracy. Mm. The second thing that we must do is we have to give people a compelling vision and a plan for the country.
True.
And that's why, the GNU has spoken about hosting a national dialogue, which will essentially be like CODESA. Mm-hmm. It will be a platform where all South Africans and stakeholders can come together and express their aspirations for the country that we want. Mm-hmm. And that must then inform the plan for the country for the next 5 years so that we are all singing from the same hymn sheet and there's a direction of where we are going. Mm. So that's the second thing. The third thing is that I think we must recognize that the world is changing. There are a lot more younger people. There's an aspiration to make women part and parcel of the decision-making mechanisms.
Yes.
People living with disabilities are absolutely crucial. Mm. Our township and rural towns need to be activated. And so we must all as South Africans agree on serving the people who need the most first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we've got a problem. Right now, we know that the color of poverty is black.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, that's what the reality is. That's what the stats say.
And colored?
And colored. And so I mean black in the broad definition.
Oh, yes, yes.
So colored, black, Indian, right? Mm-hmm. So if we don't recognize that and we don't move with the word justice in mind, then we've got a problem. We know that, that 80% of the people in this country are black and that by majority of the people in this country that are unemployed, that live in poverty and squalor are black people.
Yeah.
So that the policies and the approach of how we solve for the problems must respond to the identity question, must respond to the geography question, must respond to the gender question, to the age question. We've got 63% unemployed youth in this country. That's a recipe for disaster.
Definitely. Maybe DA will agree with you because they've been saying we need to help people not according to color. Poverty now has no color. Rather deal with people per situation than to find it like this whole idea of BEE. They tend to disagree with it because they feel like it just empowers the black elites at the cost of the majority that they claim to represent.
I don't think that, you can take away transformation and affirmative action as wholesale. Like I said, we must recognize and realize the country that we live in. Color matters in this country, whether you like it or not. So to say I don't see color is absolutely ridiculous. It's actually an insult, you know, because it tries to create the perception that we are all operating from the same playing field. And this whole idea of dealing with things on an ad hoc basis is inefficient. Imagine trying to run a country where every single time someone comes into the room, you must do an evaluation of how bad things are. It's not efficient. You need to have a baseline that says we must help black people, women, youth, people living with disabilities, people living in townships and in rural towns first.
Sure.
Because the data shows you where the pain is. So don't pretend that you don't see it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is BEE as a concept, as an idea, as a piece of legislation is not a problem. The problem has been how it has been utilized by the governing party in order to advance the interests of people.
Yeah.
They've used it, and the outcome has been that the political elite and the black elite, the few of them, have been the ones to benefit.
So how do we open it up to get to the people on the ground? Do we rather find a way to, how do we do it? How do we make it that, how do we make it, how do we make BEE actually effective to the people on the ground? Or do we scrap it and bring a new policy that has the same tone but focusing on the men on the ground?
We have to use multiple instruments. The legislation is one of them.
Okay.
Right? The idea of broad-based economic empowerment is actually quite powerful. Even if you look at the dimensions of what that is supposed to mean, it's actually quite effective, but it has to be exercised properly.
Okay.
The problem we have is patronage and corruption. Right? When you bring people in and you create an agency effect, what the agency effect means is that a black company comes in as a fronter of business and they take 25% of the business, but they do nothing. You're not helping anybody. You're not even helping black people, because there's no transfer of skills. There's no building of industry. There's no building of expertise. You know, it looks like you're doing something good, but at the heart of it, you're not doing a very good job. So it's not just about giving shares to black people. It's about fundamentally reorientating the economy so that black people and women can get opportunities. ESD, for example, is not a problem. Enterprise and supply development, right? It's a critical instrument of enabling small black businesses to get access to opportunity.
Sure.
But it must be governed properly. People who are capable, people who are passionate and who have the capacity to deliver must be given the opportunity. And where there is no opportunity, we must train people up, we must develop them, and we must get them ready to be able to take up opportunities. And the last thing is there must be punitive outcomes for people who don't abide by the law.
Definitely.
There are big businesses that factor in the penalties in their income statements on a monthly and on an annual basis. Because for them, they are like, we don't have to adhere to this thing. We'll rather pay the 5 million rand fee, penalty fee. We must say, no. As executives and directors of this company, there must be other punitive outcomes if you don't meet your BEE outcomes, because then you are preventing transformation. And it's not just the stick. There must also be incentives, but there must be a change of attitude where everybody across the country understands what justice means. Justice means that those who don't have must be put closer to the front of the line so that we can bridge this inequality gap, this poverty gap, and this wealth gap that we have in the country.
You know, one thing, Tebogone, all these policies, they sound so good. And for many years, ANC or the ruling government has come with a lot of policies that sounded so good to the ear. But the implementation of it, it never really saw a light of day. I will tell you, I think before this election, you had something called 350s. I think they're still going ahead even now, where they were trying to meet people halfway. While you are unemployed, hey, some bit of 350. And there was a party during the election, Action SA, that they were introducing a universal basic income grant of one point something. Would that be something, in your view, that might assist in dealing with the poverty situations in the ground?
You need a social security net. If you know this country and you know how people have been systemically locked out of the system, it's important that you have a social security net. Mm-hmm. And there must be various instruments from, you know, social grants to children's grants to even job seekers grants. Mm-hmm. You know, earlier on, I was speaking to one of your colleagues and I was saying the cost of looking for work in this country mm-hmm. is ridiculous.
It's a lot.
If you're an unemployed graduate, Udulakoval, mm-hmm. and you want to come and look for work in Sandton,
sure.
you must pay for taxi fare. Mm-hmm. You must print documents. You must go door to door to different companies. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in between there, you need to buy a meal
yes.
Before you head back home. Now, you're unemployed, so where are you supposed to get that money? So having something like a job seeker's grant, which enables people to have some money in their pocket, or at least some discounts, whether it's transport discounts or printing discounts or internet discounts, will enable young people to be closer to the opportunity of work. Those type of social security inputs are important. But we can't rely on that alone. We have too many people who rely on the state at the moment.
Yeah.
And that is why the priority of the state must be to build this economy, grow this economy, and create jobs. When people have jobs, they don't have to then rely on 350. 350 does nothing. You know, you go into one of the retailers, you can't even buy 4 to 5 items with that amount of money. If we're going to give people grants, number one, we must try to decrease the base of grants, and then we must deepen the base of grants. So what do I mean by that? Decrease the number of people that are on grant support, but then increase the quantum that you give to those people. And so for us, our aspiration is to move that grant up from 350 to 650 and to one day 1,335, which is the poverty line. You must give people support that is meaningful. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything.
I will tell you one thing. The party, Razem Zansi, positioned itself before the election as the party for the youth. And we had something called NYDA a couple of years ago. And there's still concerns around this to say it is a good idea. Another one of those good ideas. However, most people can't have access to it. The governance of it seems to be quite poor. Where do you think you got it wrong?
I think we've got a state-owned enterprise crisis. If you look at our state-owned internet enterprises, they are in deep turmoil. And that, again, is the leadership question. Do we have the right people doing the right work? And that's why our slogan was, we need new leaders. We really need to look at the leadership in across the state-owned enterprises. And we then need to look at what is the mandate that they are given and do proper performance management. It's only in South Africa, no, maybe not only in South Africa, but it's one of the South African phenomenons that politicians who underperform get promoted. We spoke about our previous Minister of Education who now retained her seat in the executive. That shouldn't happen. In any other country or in a self-respecting country, everyone should have a performance report that says, this is what you were supposed to deliver for the country. Let's assess how you performed. And if you underperformed, you should exit. And someone else who has got a better understanding of the issues should be put in. And that is the new culture that I think we should bring in. And I hope the GNU, because you'll now have real competitive politics, we'll start to see what it looks like for other political parties to govern. And you can start now raising the standard so that people are held to a higher standard.
Teboho, during the election, the party was not very clear on maybe mom even about this issue. The land question, what is Razem Zansi's position on it?
The land question is a very important question. And it's not that we were quiet about it. I think it was located in other spaces. So number one, the land question is an identity question.
Okay.
First and foremost, we can't talk about, I don't think a rainbow nation is a real thing, by the way.
Okay.
Is it an aspiration? Absolutely. We can't speak about being united and solidarity if we don't look at each other as people and as humans and as equal. So the land question is part of dealing with those injustices and recognizing where we are located in terms of history and what we want to aspire for as a collective in this country. That's number one. Number two, it's an economic question. Land is an asset. It sits on a balance sheet and you can leverage land, which means that you can borrow against that land.
Yes.
Right? If you and I have got access to land, we can go to the bank and say, I've got land to that is 1 million rand. Can you borrow me 500,000 rand so I can, you know, plow on that land and do X, Y, Z? But it's collateral, right? And so there must be a process of making sure that we give the South Africans of this native country access to land, both commercially, but also for the use of agriculture, for the use of other multi-purpose. The third thing I would say is we must also not create a crisis simply because we just want to give people land. Some people, number one, don't want land. They want to live in the suburbs or they want to live in the city, and they're not interested in owning land. They'd rather own other asset types.
Okay.
But for those who want land, we should be able to give them access. And then we must provide supporting infrastructure for that land to be converted into asset. Barren land that sits in somewhere, some remote area, is not useful.
Yes.
We need to be able to empower people to convert land into an asset of value, whether you want to do agriculture or you want to do livestock, whatever the case is, the state must give you the research, the startup capital, the support in order for you to make that land count for something.
So the question is, how do we redistribute it? You take it back to the state, you give it to individuals, you give it to the kings. What would be the best plan to redistribute the land?
The state already owns land. So we should be doing a full register of which land do we own, where is it, who needs that land, and how do we redeploy that land usefully. We must start there.
Okay.
We've got a massive, you know, it's like our property portfolio. South Africans and even Gautengers have got amazing properties.
Yeah.
But they've been left to die and they've been left to become dilapidated. And they now can't be used for accommodation. They can't be used for business, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where we must start.
Okay.
And when we can do that effectively, we can then reassess where are the gaps and how do we solve for the gaps. But if you've got something that is useful in your hand and you can't utilize it, that must be the very first place that you start to turn things around.
Thipsa, before I let you go, I think you are one of the parties that were known to be well-funded before the election. Where do you think the party went wrong in terms of to get young people to the polls or to get young people to register? Why do you think you did not really succeed in getting the lot of youth which didn't go to vote?
So I think that's a two-part question. It's a youth question and it's a funding question.
Yes.
So let me separate the two. So in terms of funding, we were not well funded. Actually, we need more funding. If you look at the funding spectrum, right?
But weren't you going around 15 million, 16 million?
15 million is nothing in the context of a campaign.
Okay.
You spoke about posters when you started the show, right? Those posters cost money.
Yes, true.
T-shirts cost money. Moving people around the country to do campaigns cost money. It's nothing. You know, if you compare our campaign to the likes of the EFF, the ANC, and the DA, it's minuscule. It's not even anywhere close. Do you know how much it is to fill up FNP Stadium?
Yeah.
It's not less than 50 million. So even with the total funding that we got, we couldn't replicate what the EFF did. We can't replicate what the ANC did, right? And so that's the context that people must have. So that's the first thing. The second thing that you must think about is, because we are not a party represented in parliament, all the funds that we get have to be brought in from other sources.
Yes.
Right? Represented parties get an allocation from the IEC. Did you know that the ANC got, I think, something north of 150 million?
Yo.
150 million rand, because that's the allocation they get based on proportional representation. DA gets money, the EFF gets money, all the way down to the ACDP. We as a new party did not get access to that money. Perhaps in 2026 and 2029, now that we're represented in parliament, we'll get a very small amount.
Okay.
But certainly we didn't get as much as people think we got. You know, the idea is that we have to revolutionize and change and transform the idea of party funding in this country.
Sure.
You have to fund democracy. It's expensive. You know, running a political party is a very expensive exercise. And if we want to get the democracy and the outcomes that we want, South Africans must contribute their time, their skills, their ideas and money to the political parties that they want. And there mustn't be this fear and this victimization that happens, because that's why people don't overtly say we want to support Rise Mzansi, many of them have got businesses that are exposed to government.
Yes.
And so what you don't want is you support Rise Mzansi because you believe in them, but then all of a sudden, how fitla kwale, people tell you, we can't give you business because we saw that you support those other guys. That's the problem. We must change patronage politics. We must change fear-based politics. And people must be able to support the political party that they believe in openly.
Yes.
And when we do that, we will start to see, number one, smaller parties doing better. But number two, then people must start to declare their funding. Go and look at the funding declarations. Rise Mzansi is one of the few political parties that declared truthfully and transparently what we got. The other political parties...
Yeah, even the EFF, you're still waiting for
you
them.
You said it.
You're still waiting for the EFF declaration to say, when did you get the money for that FNB arrangement?
That campaign couldn't have been less than 100 million.
Yeah.
It couldn't have been.
Yeah.
Those massive posters that you see, ours are just the small ones. They've got the big flag-like ones that are on every off-ramp. That's triple the cost of the posters that we have.
So on the voter apathy, youth apathy actually, what would be the party's new strategy to get those young people active in this democracy, to start participating? We have upcoming election now in 2026.
Yeah.
We have also a general coming up after that. And still, we see that with all this election, young people are still held back. Do you think it's because of apathy or is it a vote of no confidence in the system?
It's definitely not apathy. We've engaged young people. They are passionate. They are informed. There's a few things that have to happen in order to activate the youth to participate. Number one, they need to see themselves in the politics. We can't have ministers that are 78 years old, and that's the type of people that dominate the conversation. There must be a lot more youth mix, even at the apex of, you know, some of these executive ministries and so on. That's the first. Representation matters. Number two, we must position the issues of the youth at the core of the agenda.
Yes.
They keep telling us what they want to see. And we keep telling them, wait, man, we're going to come and deal with you guys. So it's important that they see that we take their issues seriously. And we must do that. The third thing is civic education is important. People must know what democracy means, what voting means.
Yes.
There's been just a disillusionment around the power of the vote, the power of elections. And we need to reconnect people to the importance of participating in elections so that they understand the responsibility of active citizenry. The last thing I will add around activating the youth base is everybody's a politician.
Sure.
I think we make the misconception that, hey, what the fuck is a politician? If you make a choice around where your money goes, whether you buy quarter at the corner street or you go to the supermarket to buy food, that's a political decision.
Yeah.
Where your money goes is a political decision. And so we are all politicians. There's just a difference in terms of who's in active politics and who is not. So we must use spaces like faith-based organizations, civil society, sporting clubs. Any space where you can convene people should be used as a space to educate, to activate, to organize, and to mobilize.
My brother, I'm going to let you go. And I think in the next 5 years, we are looking forward to seeing Rise Mzansi shaking up the parliament. And most people will be looking at you to in the next election to say, if you promise to deliver this, to deliver what you promised in your campaign. I know you're not in government fully, but I'm sure with your ABC seat there and also with your voice in parliament, we can see a lot of shake and moves with the party. But before I let you go, to the thousands of Christians, the thousands of South Africans who voted for you, what is your message to them? The camera is behind me here. What can they expect from the party, and what is your message?
Our first message is thank you so much. We appreciate your confidence in a very early move into getting into politics. Gratitude to all of you. The second thing is now the work starts. We must go and deliver what we have promised the South Africans, and we need your help. This is not just about those who are in parliament or in the legislature in Gauteng. It's about all of us. And let's rally behind our leaders in public office and make sure that we hold this government to account, but most most importantly, we deliver quality services. The last thing I will add is 2026 is around the corner. Those are local government elections. That is where politics affects households and people. And so it's important that we all get ready for that journey. Rise from Zansi, rise for your local government, put your hand up and participate in the politics of your area. And let's organize, mobilize, and make sure that we rise from Zansi. Danko.
That's Teboho Mwalusi from Rise from Zansi. Please share your comments on the comment section. Tell us, what are your thoughts? They just joined the GNU in Gauteng. They are governing along Panyaza Lesufi. We'll be looking forward to seeing what can they add into the mix of politics in the next 5 years. Other than that, this was Beyond the Ballot. I am Bafana Modise, proudly brought to you by the Podcast Party, where great minds don't think alike. See you next time. Ciao, ciao.